When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Canada invokes emergency powers to halt demonstrations against its pandemic restrictions. Plus, we're reporting that the SEC is investigating block trading on Wall Street, and Germany's leader flies to Moscow in a scramble to avoid war in Ukraine.
It's a last-ditch attempt to ensure that the West has exhausted all possibilities of talks because no one wants a conflict.
It's Tuesday, February 15th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Russia's defense ministry says it has pulled back some troops from near Ukraine, while also noting that other military exercises are ongoing. The announced pullback of some Russian forces comes amid heightened tensions over Ukraine, which Russia has surrounded with more than 130,000 troops. German Chancellor Olaf Scholz is today visiting Moscow for talks with Russian President Vladimir Putin. Our Moscow bureau chief Ann Simmons says this last-ditch attempt to avoid a Russian invasion of Ukraine may include a previous peace agreement related to fighting in the eastern part of Ukraine.
One of the possible off-ramps in terms of diplomacy is a return to the Minsk agreements based on a ceasefire that was brokered in 2014-2015. The Russians are very much willing to follow that track. The problem is that Ukraine hasn't been as willing, citing security concerns.
We'll have more on Russia's strategy and its diplomatic calculus later in the show. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has invoked emergency powers in a bid to end disruptive demonstrations against his government's COVID-19 restrictions. Those new powers allow Canadian authorities to limit public gatherings, a step Trudeau said was necessary to end 19 days of demonstrations by truck drivers in Ottawa.
The scope of these measures will be time-limited, geographically targeted, as well as reasonable and proportionate to the threats they are meant to address.
Canada is also expanding money laundering laws in an effort to cut off funding for demonstrators and will require crowdfunding platforms to report what they deem as large, suspicious donations. We are exclusively reporting that Intel is close to a deal to buy the Israeli chip manufacturer Tower Semiconductor for nearly $6 billion. The deal represents a hefty premium on Tower's market value of roughly $3.6 billion, and the news sent shares soaring in after-hours trading. Sources say the deal may be announced as soon as this week if talks don't fall apart. The deal is part of Intel's plans to make more chips for other companies. And accounting firm Mazars USA says it can no longer stand by financial statements it previously prepared for the Trump Organization, and that it's withdrawing from its work for the former president. That's according to a letter made public as a part of a broader civil fraud investigation into Trump's financial dealings by New York's Attorney General's office. Mazars said it hadn't concluded that the statements prepared between 2011 and 2020 contain material discrepancies. A spokeswoman for the Trump Organization said Mazars' work was performed in accordance with all applicable accounting standards and principles. Trump and his company have denied any wrongdoing. We're exclusively reporting that the Securities and Exchange Commission is probing the business of block trading on Wall Street. Sources say regulators have sent subpoenas to firms including Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs, as well as several hedge funds. They're examining whether bankers may have tipped off hedge fund clients in advance of large share sales and whether the funds benefited from that information. For more on this story, we're joined by finance reporter Patricia Kausman. Hi, Patricia.
Hi, good morning. Glad to be here.
Thanks for being with us. First off, for those unfamiliar with Wall Street, could you explain exactly how block trading works in the first place?
Sure. The name is a bit intuitive, but like block trades, basically, they are done when a company or a large shareholder wants to sell a lot of stock at once. So banks are asked by, you know, these people, companies want to sell the block of shares to bid for entire thing. And then what they do is that the banks typically submit the bids at a discount to whatever the market price is. And then the bank that wins offers the shares to clients at a slight premium, so making a profit. In theory, everyone's happy and, you know, it happens quite a bit.
So, Patricia, why is this practice of block trading raising some concerns with regulators now?
The issue here is where the bankers improperly alerted certain clients to the sales before they made public, right? And whether this client somehow benefited from the information. Hedge funds, for example, they do the so-called short sale of shares, which is basically a bet that the price of the stock will fall. Usually when a block trade happens and a bunch of like shares are sold, there is a fall, a natural fall in the stock price because there is an increase in supply of that stock. Right? So in fact, the shares of companies selling stock actually often fall even the hours before the big block is sold. So that raises questions, right? Why, if nobody has any inside information, suddenly you see prices falling even before the block of the shares are sold in the market?
According to our reporting, lawyers argue that the rules governing block trades are especially murky. So how, in that case, can regulators assess whether anything problematic has occurred?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what the regulators find. And if they see communication between the banks and the clients and establish that chips were provided so that the banks informed the clients beforehand, that they probably would have a case. I think it's also important to note that, of course, that issuing subpoenas, which was the case here, doesn't necessarily mean anyone's going to be charged or anyone has actually done anything wrong. But clearly, that's what the investigators and the regulators believe.
Were regulators to find evidence of wrongdoing or possibly illegality, what could the consequence be for Wall Street firms?
We're reporting that both the Securities and Exchange Commission and the Department of Justice are looking into this. So the SEC can bring a civil case, right? So like it's like fines, they ordered huge settlements with the banks. And the DOJ can actually bring a criminal case, so it can charge like even individuals. We have to wait and see what they find out, if they find anything.
That was finance reporter Patricia Kausman. Patricia, thanks for bringing us this story.
Thank you so much for having me.
Coming up, as the world waits to see whether Russia invades Ukraine, a multi-year conflict in eastern Ukraine's Donbas region offers a glimpse of what war could look like. And, as our Moscow bureau chief explains, what a potential diplomatic solution could look like, too. We've got that story after the break.
WSJ Special Access gives you a front row seat to some of the Wall Street Journal's most exciting content, like The Quirkier Side of Life, a new series that features the fun, surprising stories our reporters come across.
The chief executive walks 10,000 barefoot steps every day. He recalls stepping on a bee, which put him off earthing for a couple of days, but he got back to it.
Check out The Quirkier Side of Life on WSJ Special Access, only for WSJ subscribers.
Who really knows Russia's thinking on a possible invasion of Ukraine? President Putin's intentions seem to change by the day. But one perennially helpful clue about Moscow's strategy is to look at how Russia-led separatists in eastern Ukraine's Donbas region have been waging a low-grade war since 2014. The Journal's Moscow bureau chief, Anne Simmons, joins us with more. Hi, Anne.
Hello.
Unlike Russia's annexation of Crimea, the conflict in the Donbas region has unfolded quite differently. Could you just remind us how this conflict unfolded and how the two situations differ?
Well, in 2014, when Russia annexed the Crimean Peninsula, it was during the time when Russia actually took advantage of instability in Ukraine because one of the Kremlin's protégés, if you wish, was ousted from power. And basically, there was extreme insecurity in the capital and around the country. Russian troops swiftly moved into Crimea, and before anyone knew it, it was annexed. In Donbas, Russia has given support to separatists who feel and say that they are already part of Russia. There are two areas there, Donetsk and Luhansk, and they have both proclaimed independence. It's widely believed that Russia is arming separatists in that region. Russia denies even having a presence in eastern Ukraine. But Western intelligence officials say otherwise. They say they have given backing to these two breakaway regions and that, in fact, Russia has fomented the crisis in the Donbass.
And how does the conflict in the Donbass inform us about the potential consequences of a further Russian invasion of Ukraine?
There's going to be a lot of upset and turmoil and instability. And in 2014, there was mass migration of refugees from the area into Russia. These were Russian speakers who fled across the border when the fighting began. No one wants that again. So it would be worth keeping an eye on how people are coping now. They've already been suffering for the last 8 years, and this has just added to the anxiety, to the instability. And in fact, it is not only eastern Ukraine that will suffer if there is some kind of fully fledged war. It's going to be a geopolitical nightmare for Europe. Ukraine sits in an area that's very near to the European Union and NATO countries. And that's going to unsettle the whole region. And all of those countries will be impacted, whether or not they are physically involved in any type of conflict in Ukraine.
You're reporting today that the Russian parliament is considering proposals to recognize parts of the Donbass that it controls as independent states. Could you explain the meaning of that?
It would basically mean that Russia would consider those two regions to be independent and as such not a part of Ukraine. And that could present Russia with a justification to move into those areas. In both of those areas, Donetsk and Luhansk, there is a large, predominant Russian-speaking population. More than 1 million people in that region have taken Russian citizenship. They have Russian passports. So if there is recognition of those two regions, it would basically give Moscow an opportunity to go into those regions because they would be then recognized as being separate regions from Ukraine. And the justification would be to go in to protect Russian-speaking nationals.
Why didn't Russia do that previously?
It's a topic that's come up in the past, but Russia has never moved on this. I think the opportunity has been created now because Russia has said that it feels threatened by NATO being near Ukraine and even in Ukraine. And if NATO is already in Ukraine, Russia feels that NATO can then be in eastern Ukraine, which would be essentially right on Russia's doorstep.
And finally, Anne, how have Russia and Ukraine fought the conflict in the Donbass? And what exactly does that tell us about how they approach conflict with one another?
Well, there has been sporadic fighting, intermittent fighting, throughout the 8 years of this slow-burning conflict, if you wish. And there have been also disruptions in terms of websites, internet access going down, phone access also being curtailed. And that has pointed to possible cyber attacks and cyber sabotage. Also, there has been a propaganda war, both sides, of course, blaming the other for atrocities. The thing we should also keep in mind is that there is a lot of connection, a lot of contact between ordinary Russians and Ukrainians. Many of them are related. There is cross-border activity between the two countries among ordinary people.
That was the Journal's Moscow Bureau Chief Anne Simmons. Anne, thank you.
Thank you.
And that's What's News for Tuesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.